This podcast is brought to you by the new term at fxphd.com. Hand in hand with FX Guide, our training site FXPhd allows you to do online training with the benefit of industry professionals to guide you. This new April term includes training in Nuke 7, Hero, editing, grading, lens tech, and even maths for VFX. Check it all out at fxphd.com. Hi, and welcome to this week's VFX show. It's actually Mark 2 of the VFX show we've tried to record on Olympus Has Fallen, though admittedly the first time we tried doing it, several people, including myself, had quite a lot of tequila. Because it was after my birthday party, enough of that for the time being. We're looking at the first of several films that has the White House under attack, and this one has the White House under attack in what can only be described as a great cross between Mr. Smith Goes to Washington and Die Hard. Joining me on the line is Jeff Huser. How are you, Jeff?
Hey, good, Mike.
And you were one of the other two people that was with me in the car park, along with Jason Diamond. How are you, sir?
Good.
So we tried recording this in the car park because we thought it would be kind of fun while we were waiting for a cab at 1 a.m. In Vegas. Unfortunately, one of us, that would be me, failed to record. So luckily you're going to get the slightly less abusive version, I'm willing to guess, than the one we previously recorded. But yes, so that's why this podcast is a little late coming out. We couldn't salvage the files from the thing. But having said that, it was kind of noisy with ambulances going by and various things going on. So, guys, as we like to do on the show each week, we're going to look at what we think of the film first and then what we think of the VFX. So let's start with what you thought, Jason, of the film itself. A retribution sort of, I don't know, gore fest of retaliation and body counts. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought the movie was pretty terrible, honestly. It just seemed like a quick grab at some take box office money for some, you know, patriotic cinema goers who want to see rogue North Koreans, not even associated with North Korean government, but luckily North Korean, to take over the White House. They're not entirely sure what the reasoning was, because they say we want you to remove the 12th Fleet and or we're going to blow everything up and then we want a helicopter to get out of here. But they could then just turn the 12th Fleet around when the guy left.
I must admit, as a non-American, I did sort of wonder why these terrorists thought that no one else would step in to help Korea. NATO... lots of other countries are actually part of the Security Council and would probably not want North Korea to attack South Korea. But anyway. Jeff, what do you think of the film?
Well, I found the film so bad in the overall film world that I had a hard time recognizing anything else about the film. I mean, I just, you know, there were so many things that just were painful about the story and about, you know, the helicopter. They're going to get a helicopter to fly out of Washington to go where? I guess they're going to have to arrange a separate phone call to figure out where the helicopter takes them that they can then go outside the United States, because the helicopter won't. There were just so many holes in the thing that drove me nuts. And the whole, you know what it reminded me of? It reminded me of invariably when somebody says we're going to make a film about the Titanic, somebody rushes out a TV movie about the Titanic. And they try to get it out before the film to steal the thunder. And that's what this felt like to me. It felt like a TV movie that was rushed out to beat some other movie. And I have no idea how that works in Hollywood. I can't imagine budgeting and time-wise that can happen. But there is the Roland Emmerich movie coming out, right? White House Has Fallen or something like that, very shortly thereafter. And God knows if there's somebody that we'd think would be the best at blowing up the White House by now, it would be him.
He has thought a couple of times.
But this was directed by Antoine Fuqua, who did Training Day and some other films that are good. You know what I mean? Like,
well, of course, that was one of the reasons that we chose this film to put on the podcast, because the director did have a good pedigree. And also, Conrad Hall, who's the DOP, shot things like Panic Room and other films that I really liked.
Right.
So it wasn't, I don't think it was a a film that has short on potential from a cast or talent point of view, because there's actually quite a lot of good actors in there. Now, it's mandatory now to have Morgan Freeman as an American president or American president wannabe. But yep. Jared Butler, I quite like Butler. I think he's a good guy. Like, I think he's a good, you know, believable kind of action hero.
I'll hedge my review by saying it was executed fine. I mean, it is executed like a $70 million action movie. It's the script that was terrible. I mean, everyone acted fine. Everyone, you know, it was shot nicely. Everything was done appropriately. But it was, you know what I mean? It was coming out of their mouths that was the problem.
There were quite a lot of good actors lying around, right? Like Ashley Judd and Dylan McDermott. I say lying around. I should say, spoiler alert, if you haven't seen the film, we're about to wreck a lot of things. But lying around because most of the people died.
And Melissa Leo, who's an Oscar winner, no?
Angela Bassett?
I mean, yeah it was the main cast was amazing. I will say that there were some choices made in extras and people running away from debris. And
people that are good at feigning surprise?
Yeah, or over-feigning surprise. There were some scenes in the Pentagon War Room where, you know, you're supposed to be looking at the central characters, but they're reacting one way, and the people on the edges of the frame were like, you know, doing cartwheels. It was like, what the hell?
As an aside, there's actually a scene in the Godfather film, the original Godfather film, where Francis Ford Coppola is filming. Marlon Brando is there. He's lit as, you know, he was very impressively. And the camera comes around to a doorway, and the door opens, and somebody steps into the doorway and goes, oh my God, like, you know, it's the Godfather. Looks really panicked and leaves. And apparently it was somebody that just walked onto the set thinking that they were filming the other way, saw the camera was pointed at them, went, oh my God, and left, right? And the point was, it's a really great reaction because it's like, you know, oh, Godfather, you know, like, oh my God, I've stepped in the... But in fact, yeah. I've heard the commentary with Francis Ford Coppola talking. It's very authentic. A trouble is here, when people were sort of acting surprised, it was almost like, oh my God, I've got no clothes on? Wait, no, that's probably too much. Oh, wait.
Yeah.
Wait. It's like...
I think they went. They gathered the extras from the Toho School of Extras.
Okay.
Well, and it's also, I'm sure it's hard on a set like that to be looking at every piece of action in the frame and, you know, as you're shooting it. But, I mean, there were just some total distractions in some of those scenes where you just thought, wait a minute, you know, getting good extras in those kind of scenes is pretty important, I would think. Certainly distracted me.
Yeah. So, this is a film that has some obvious issues. And also has this kind of massive body count, which in light of recent tragedies in elsewhere, we want to point out, we probably wouldn't have picked a film that was quite so gratuitous in its violence in the base, in the shadow, I guess, of what's happened recently in Boston and places. Though I will say in fairness, we did actually have this schedule down from before that. But I guess as not an American, this really does seem like a pretty huge body count. Was there any kind of reaction in the States to this film being violent, or was it just par for the course these days?
Luckily, I don't think anyone went to see it.
Okay.
Well, enough people went that it made $83 million in the U.S., which kind of surprised me when I looked that up today.
That's true.
I mean, that was pretty shocking. Although worldwide, I noticed the total was $88 million. So apparently the content doesn't really play outside the US too much.
Well, in fairness, it hasn't actually opened in Australia yet. I think it's opening like today. So I'm sure other places of the world may be the same. Okay, well.
I'd love to see the reviews from writers from outside the US too. The ones from inside the US have, of course, been pretty widely.
Is it going to open in South Korea? Because I'd like to read those reviews.
There is some fairly patriotic stuff in here, not least of which is falling slow motion, burning American flags and stuff. It seems, as an outsider's point of view, that these are, how can I put this, kind of emotional cliches. And I'm guessing that's the same for you guys, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you can't, without the risking sounding, the shot of a burning American flag falling from the sky does nothing for me emotionally.
Because it's quite a well-worn
Even if it's not, I don't identify my where I live with a flag, right? It's if I see that Empire State Building blown up, if I see landmarks or something that signifies the country, yes, I mean, that's just me. I'm a little more cynical than most moviegoers, maybe. But it just seemed like they went for the easy shot. You know, you're already blowing up the White House. Do you really need to show the flag falling? I mean, we get it. You know what I mean?
Well, and it felt to me like it was an afterthought because it was probably the single worst shot in the movie. I mean,
well, it was pretty that or the one before it where the guys were taking the flag down and they were
that sequence,
keyed against the red sky.
I think you were saying that you felt it wasn't. There was a whole backlit scene, and they certainly weren't. And the flag looked to me like it had been slowed down with, you know, Kronos after the fact, and the key was bad, and that whole thing that whole sequence was just painful. Now, I must say, Mike and I saw this in the theater in L.A., down at the Howard Hughes Center, for those living in L.A. who know it, and the audience was quite participatory and loud.
Yep.
To the point where it was almost, it wasn't a big crowd. There were probably, what do you think, 8 people in the theater?
No, there were more than that. But I've got to say, at the end of it, I said to Jeff, I think I should get out of here before anyone realizes I'm a foreigner or I'll get lynched. So strong was the, there was one point where they sent out Dylan McDermott's character to go get the Butler's character. And someone in the audience like yelled out in the cinema, basically, yeah, right.
Yeah, that was classic.
It was very gung-ho. Look, Die Hard was also gung-ho. It wasn't so patriotic because there was no so strong American overlay of foreign affairs, but it didn't...
Well, there sort of was, wasn't there? Because it was Hans Gruber, and it was a subtle play on American heroic, you know, action against foreign...
No, there was definitely a play on American hero imagery, Yippie Coyote and the cowboy stuff going on, but it wasn't as if they were striking at the heart of America's political system, nor was any of the people that were captured elected officials in the way that a president was.
It was a bank, so actually it probably was more the heart of the American system. Things have been going lately, but...
Took the words out of my mouth, Jeff.
So we like Die Hard. We like Die Hard a lot. So, you know, to quote one of your presidential debates, I've seen Die Hard, I like Die Hard, Olympus Has Fallen is no Die Hard. So I think that was probably you'd agree with me, right? The closest we have in terms of it, if you were... Because this film did tend to steal a little bit from the imagery of that film, right down to the helicopter gunship attack. I was waiting for two of the guys to turn to each other and say, just like in Nam. Wasn't born back in Nam, dickhead. So it was pretty, you know, it wasn't shot for shot, but my gosh, there were a lot of references that you'd say were lifted from Die Hard.
Yes.
Okay, let's discuss the visual effects. So if we can, we'll work our way through, but we've already touched on one of them. So let's jump to that bad one, and then we'll jump back to the beginning to discuss the opening snow sequence. But the sequence that we really, Jeff and I think both universally thought was the worst, was the keying sequence of the flag coming down. And the reasons for that are manifold, but we like to actually articulate these things, not because we're trying to rub salt in the wounds, but because the whole point of the VFX show is that we're going to offer a critique, and I don't think it's enough just to say something sucks. You need to say why, and if, God forbid, you were placed in the position of doing the shot, how you'd have done it better. So for me, Jeff, the thing that I hated about that shot, as you already mentioned, is that it was such a backlit shot. It was meant to be sunset, orange sky, and these were frontlit actors, and their edges had no light bleed around them. It just felt like it was bad roto. It was such a cardboard cutout A over B type comp, almost to the point that we could see white edges from where clearly there'd been a much brighter lit sky, maybe grey, behind them on the original plate photography. That's what bugged me. What I think bugged you, if I can paraphrase, is that it was then post-treated to slow down. Is that fair?
That's what I thought the flag falling was. I mean, those two shots in back-to-back form, those two just really stood out to me as like, were they an afterthought? Did somebody say, gee, what we really need here is to pump up some thing and we should shoot this real quick? Or I mean, it just felt like not enough time was spent on those shots. That's all it looked like to me. Like, really, I mean, I can't imagine.
Yeah.
There were 1,800 effect shots, they said. There were 1,300 that ended up in the movie.
Yep.
And, you know,
it'd be good if it had been 1,298.
Yeah.
And they'd lift those two out.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have missed those two shots, frankly. I don't think.
Yeah, it was a little like, hey, Larry, Bob, run down there and lift up that mop for a second. we're gonna roto in a we're gonna comp in a flagpole later, but just give me some reference, and then they just used it.
I think in reality, somebody could say, look, we're going to put a shot in and no one's going to notice. And there are occasions where that's absolutely true. There are occasions where there are shots that have faults in them that you really don't pick up until someone points them out. Or some smart-ass website, you know, posts one of those, you know, 10 mistakes in blah, blah film. And really, it doesn't, but in any way, kind of go past a per frame by frame analysis. This is not one of those cases. This was, what the heck am I looking at? Completely out of the film. If you think absolutely. No one was going to notice, I think we all were just mortified to see that up on the screen.
When that first shot pops up, I was just like, it was kind of a stunned, like, wow, what happened here?
Yeah. Now, it is probably, I don't know, something that could have been done even by the editorial team or by the color grading team and not by the effects team. So I want to be clear about that. I don't know who did that shot. I don't know where it came from. But clearly with more power in the grading suite, to pull kind of keys, but not to be able to perhaps massage those keys to the level that we'd like, you can get shots like that. You know, it could have been a color grading type thing. I'm not saying it was, but again, it's sort of, it just seems so odd that there should be some backstory to why it was as odd as it was. And I will say also that as bad as that was, there were some other shots that I knew were visual effect shots that I looked for in this film, and I couldn't pick them. I thought they did a really, really good job. But unfortunately, that's the nature of inconsistency. It's the ones that are horrendous that really stick out in your memory. And that one was top of my list. So, Jason, let's go back to the beginning of the film. We've got a snow sequence and a car that goes off a cliff in the narrative. A lot of that sequence had digital cars and quite, you know, strong visual effects. It's a major effects sequence. Did that feel bad to you?
No, that felt really good. I mean, that I didn't even realize that that was as heavy of a VFX sequence until I dug into the research to see, you know, when we were prepping for the show. And I thought it was really solidly done. I mean, you don't, you know, you get, they lull you, you know, into the, this is not a visual effect shot. Here's the boring dialogue between the president and his wife and the kid. And the, you know, they mask the visual effects well with the pat dialogue. And then, you know, when you get to the, I would say probably my only, and maybe this is more of a narrative issue. They say in the, when I was reading, about the sequence that it was black ice that caused the car to skid, yep. but you see something impact the windshield. I thought it was like, oh, someone, this is the beginning of the assault, right? Like they're going to try and take them out here and then they're going to escape to the White House. I don't know what, but it seemed a little inconclusive as to what made them all of a sudden, you know, skim off the bridge. But as in, that's a narrative. That's a directorial issue, not a VFX issue. I thought the car was executed really nice. It was a mixture of live action stage of a bridge section, bridge span with a real car for a bunch of the overhead shots of them trying to stabilize the car as it was teeter-tottering on the bridge. But
not just like the overhead shots either. There were side shots. Wherever you had the guys kind of grabbing the car.
Yeah, exactly. The physical actors' physical interactions with the car. It was a real car. And then pull back out to CG for, you know, environment. I mean, if you look at the shots of the stage, you know, it's a bright sort of green screen stage and it looks admirably dark, snowy, you know, moody, you know, really nicely comped and graded.
Yeah, I'd also say that the interior car shots, which are, again, green screen for back windows, certainly passed my sort of green screen window test, which is normally that stuff is way over lit and stuff and just really doesn't work very well at all. Those shots that we're talking about, the sequence actually was done out of Ghost, wasn't it, in Denmark, I believe?
Yep.
And Evan Jacobs is the overall VFX supervisor. Now, Evans is a really, you know, talented supervisor, having worked on things like, I don't know, Alice in Wonderland and, you know, just a ton of stuff. So, and going back further, actually, I think Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, when I think I may have interviewed him on that, but anyway, but there's just like a ton of films. So a very experienced visual effects supervisor, and this sequence was, I think, just a really good opening kind of piece of drama. You know, it. I agree about the story point. I heard that sort of bang noise as well. Maybe they added that because it wasn't dramatic enough, but certainly it was a believable kind of sequence, and it didn't come back again. So, you know, it wasn't like they got to reuse the assets, but those cars, those exterior shots of the cars driving through the snow were all just CG. And I guess CG cars, Jeff, is something that from commercials world, we just got pretty much nailed these days, but still it's nice environment work.
Yeah, no, I thought they did a nice job with that. And also the day for night. I mean, I have a slight memory that thinking that perhaps shooting from above from a helicopter at night in the snow, that maybe things were a little sharp, but I'd have to see it again, and that's not going to happen to evaluate that. So, I mean, I just, in my brain, I kind of thought about that, because a lot of times with day for night stuff, things feel a little too sharp because it was shot, you know, sharp, as opposed to, you know, chasing a dark object.
Yeah. I think.
But it worked really well for me. I mean, it worked fine.
Yeah, I think there is a point at which movie lore allows you to have a slightly more exterior well-lit scene than you would get at a mathematical level. Mm-hmm. In other words, I don't have a problem with once the action has happened that there's a bit of extra bounce light around, and in a real night thing, you know, you'd be really hard pushed to see stuff because it isn't, after all, primarily about just nailing it from a mathematical point of view.
Right.
I didn't feel like it felt unreasonable.
Well, also, intellectually, you know that there's probably 10 cars, you know, backed up and sliding around or whatever. So there's headlights and, you know, I think your brain sort of puts it together and says, you know, there's a lot of light flying around, even though it's dark, that it wouldn't be illogical to see a light on someone's face or, you know, have something be a little more lit.
Yeah.
No, certainly of all the things in this movie, that sequence was probably one of the best, I would say.
What was your take just in terms of, I mean, did you guys know Ghost, just to be blunt, as an effects company?
Nope, no.
Because they've actually done some really interesting work. I mean, I don't know if you've ever been to their website. I think it's just ghost.dk. But yeah, they've worked on some really good films. I think some of the work may have started initially as kind of helping out. I don't know if it was 911 or just, you know, sort of backing up other companies. But certainly... they now have a really good reel, and it's interesting because, you know, it's a company in Denmark. It doesn't sort of immediately strike you as a classic place for visual effects, and yet the work that they've done in a range of American blockbusters is actually pretty impressive. And I wonder if that's, you know, just part of this challenge, because this company's been going since about 99, of my, I don't know, perception of Denmark, or just that, you know, I'm not quite got my head around, because you think of stuff leaving offshore from America and heading to Asia, to interesting European cities is not my first it's my first thought. And these guys have worked on a ton of good stuff. They're working on Pacific Rim now, but they've done stuff on Super 8 and Quantum of Solace and like a lot of European films, of course, but, you know, also ones like Harry Potter and stuff that you would know well, as I say, for the last whatever that is, you know, 14 years or something.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I'm certainly not aware of the, you know, a raging Denmark subsidy program or anything like that. So yeah. It's probably just somebody with some talent and some connections who...
Yeah, I mean, the work is good.
The work's good, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's a commercials and feature film company. It's not like effects company in the sense that it just does feature film work. But yeah. They've worked with some really big name directors. Anyway, I guess it's just one of those things, isn't it, that you can get places pigeonholed, either the facility or the country. And it's nice, I think, to see companies that can challenge those things. So if I'll take all of that back if I discover that Ghost did the comp of the top of the flag, but I don't think they did, because I got a lot of faith that those guys, if they can do that good a work on that opening car sequence, that they would...
Maybe their janitor did it and slid it in.
So a work experience. No, I don't want to put any slur on them because I think that's really a nice opening sequence. But yeah. It isn't the sequence that most people remember from the film, Because I've got to say, even after I saw the film, I kind of forgot it. But it's not that it's a forgettable sequence. But, of course, most of the action is in Washington around the White House. So when I think of the film, that's what I think of. So let's switch to that attack sequence now. And that's where I knew that there was some visual effects work going on. But I had a really hard time actually even picking it apart when I knew it was going on. And the shots I'm referring to in the attack, there's a sequence with a, what is it, a C-130, thank you. And they're sort of like basically like a airplane gunship that's doing attack stuff. But down on the ground, some explosions go off. And I knew that there was an explosion sequence with a bunch of cars getting their windows blown out and stuff around the White House, where in fact the White House was only done through a facade that was then extended. But the sideways shots, not looking at the White House, but looking at those areas of Washington, were also just plate photography. So, for example, there's a tree, and we've got this in the FX Guide story. And if you look at the tree, it's just a tree in a park. And when you see it in the film, there's an entire White House behind it with guys having, you know, major fights and smoke and everything else going on. And so for those sequences in that evolving attack on the White House out the front, I thought that was really good work. I only had one fault that I picked on one of the shots, which is one of those sideways shots. The distant buildings looked very much like a flat matte painting. But I guess I only saw that because I was looking for it. I don't think I would have picked it had I not been staring at it. What do you think, Jason?
I was surprised at how much environment was created, honestly, when I, again, when looking through the research for the show. It was really solid. Like, I, at no point did I, like you were saying, you were staring for it. I was watching, and I actually found myself wondering how much of DC they actually shot in, because it was, I don't know DC that well. In terms of, you know, if they shot in New York, obviously they'd be able to pick street corners. But it seemed very complete in terms of buildings, trees, atmosphere, smoke, and seeing the plates. The amount of work that was put into it was pretty significant. And like you said, the facade of the White House, it wasn't even like, it didn't even look like an extruded facade. Like, it was just a flat. For reference or perspective, maybe, but it was really solid work.
Yeah, so I think most of that White House attack sequence at the front is Worldwide FX, which, by the way, I really think it's just such a hard name. I'm going to give you the actual URL. I don't normally do that, but if you've ever tried looking them up, you'll get Worldwide Championship Wrestling and you get everything else. So it's actually wwfx.net. And I only say that, I don't normally give out URLs, but if you want to reference them, it is actually really hard to do a Google search on WWFX and actually find them. There's even a radio station that you'll come across before you come
across. I love their logo, like the logo on their reel or the stuff in the shots. It's so kind of like vintagey Home Shopping Network kind of. I kind of liked it.
So they're European.
I mean that in a good way, by the way. I'm
not okay, good.
Slagging their logo.
So they're quite large. They're Bulgarian, right? I mean, or at least the European offshoot is. It's like a couple of hundred people working there. Again, completely challenging my perceptions of what would be a place that I would go to. I think they have an office, though, in America, Jeff, in like Louisiana or somewhere.
Yeah, didn't they shoot a lot of the stuff down in New Orleans? I think they did.
Somewhere
Louisiana.
Right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, so again, I felt that the attack sequence at the outset was really good and pretty...
We're talking the ground attack.
The ground attack, yeah. That stuff that we're talking about was pretty... was good. And there was a lot of smoke and stuff going on, digital cars and stuff to integrate in. So if you had just that stuff and the car stuff at the opening, you'd be thinking they'd done a pretty good job for a pretty small budget film. But then we need to factor in this C-130. Now, Jeff, I'm guessing from your comment just then that you didn't like the C-130. I didn't like it a lot myself. What about you?
You know, you would think by now that planes and helicopters would be like cars, that we do them all the time and they'd be pretty more easy to do. And obviously it's daylight and, you know, all that. But I was not blown away by the C-130. Or besides that, just, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, the effects wise, but also it's like, I'm sorry, plot point wise, how do you get a C-130 to Washington, D.C. from outside the country? You know, yeah, there's so many things like that that you just go, wait a minute. There's suspension of disbelief, and then there's just like, what?
In the C-130 sequences and in the F-22s that chase it down and the helicopters that will come later in the film, there are quite a lot of shots that are impossible shots because of either roto blades or where you'd be in terms of the exhaust or the jet stream or whatever it else. And nearly all of them look cool in a previs and don't look good on camera, in my opinion. You're kind of fighting against realism when you have these shots where the camera goes between underneath the top helicopter blade and over the tail rotor blade as it kind of swoops away from camera. Right away, it's saying to the audience, well, obviously this is fake. I don't know.
Well, it's that infinite camera can do anything. Yeah. You know, that's Tintin, for example. You know, I use that as my example of like, you know, yeah, just because the camera can go anywhere because you're doing this, it really shouldn't, because it threw me off every time in that movie too.
Now, there are motion bases and there were actual plane. This wasn't all done digitally. I mean, they actually had sections of plane or cockpit for the pilot stuff coming in. But nevertheless, you got a lot of these really unrealistic camera moves that then, I don't know, it just felt like maybe at a rendering level, we just weren't getting quite the level of complexity out of the sides of the planes. They just had a kind of less than believable plastic aesthetic to the metal, especially the side rear of the C-130. I remember thinking that, and its perfect presence in the frame both worked against it for me. What do you think, Jason?
Yeah, I have come to really like the aircraft CG aircraft snap zoom that I think was in one of the early Star Wars prequels and has been in a bunch of other sort of action movies. I feel like that sells the shot a little better, even though it's obviously a gimmick, when they're in a little wide and then they kind of snap into a handheldy close up on the pilot or something. I think you needed maybe something like that. Although the C-130 is such a big lumbering plane that it's possible that they went with more slower composed shots because it's not like an F-22. You know, you're not going to give the camera work, that kind of actiony camera work, to a big, you know, lumberjack flying through the sky.
It's interesting you say that, because I had a general comment, the note that I took during the afterward, that I felt like there was a lot of stuff in the film that was covered close up and you never got the establishing shot of where you were, or you never got that reminder. You know how you could save a lot of money shooting a small film by doing a lot of close-ups, because you don't have to light the whole big area, you don't have to prop it, you don't have to extra it. There were several sections of the film where I felt that, where it was like, wow, this is, I just want somebody back out. Give me something, you know, give me a wider shot somewhere.
Now, I got that at the attack on the front of the White House going over the lawn, and they did, in fact, double the terrorists from 40 to 80 in post. But I didn't get it. I totally agree with you. Once we got in the White House, I had much, much better sense of orientation from the West Wing when people would walk around the White House than I did. It always felt like I never knew whether they were on the top floor, the bottom floor, where the bunker was in relationship to the Oval Office. I just had nothing. It was like we're suddenly in a random room and there are some tables that somebody's going to fall on, and then I'm in another random room and I have no idea how these connect. And also no idea that maybe where his son would be in another wing separate from the administrative wing. I mean, just none of that. I found it very claustrophobic in that respect. I presume, Jason, you agree with this?
Yeah, I would bet that's probably by design, to allow them the ability to put any scene really in any place within reason. Because there's no continuity
from an editorial
really.
Point of view, or
editorial,
from a, right?
No, editorial. Okay. Because you could move a scene around, or I mean, I'm speculating, but you could move a scene around if there's no definitive continuity between room A and room B. Then how do you know that it took you that long to get from there to there? And you could easily change the pace and whatnot of the scene. But
I would say what bothered me the most about the C-130 thing is just the blatant use of 9/11 imagery. And being a New Yorker, and I'm not pandering to that moment in time in any way, because I have my own issues with the event in general, but the fact that they clearly took reference from using the Washington Monument in place of the Trade Centers, and you know, doing the same like wing shear through the monument, and the way the top kind of tipped and toppled in that weird, you know, 30-ish degree angle down, it seemed a little too specific for me. That you're already having somebody — this is just a story point, obviously, I think it was executed fine — but you're already having somebody attack the White House. We get that the country's under siege. You don't need to pander to past. I mean, they might as well have had a little mini Pearl Harbor, you know, monument that they blew up too. You know what I mean? Like,
well, Jeff, you really hated the people running from the falling debris of that Washington Monument, didn't you?
There was a sequence where there were probably three shots where there were people running from debris, like back to back to back. And they all looked like they were just shot on a green screen with no lighting reference to what was shot. Now, maybe I'm wrong that they were shot for it. They just felt comped on always. And it just, maybe it was the scale. I don't know what it was, but something just, it just felt like, oh, really? We have to have people in the front of this shot, don't we? Okay. They have to be running toward camera. Okay.
Yeah.
I think it was the same dudes from the roof of the White House.
Yeah.
No, the roof of the White House, I really say, stands out completely apart from anything else. I mean, it's impossible to, I'd have no idea, but I'd almost bet all the money in my pocket that Evan never approved those shots, because I can't imagine he'd let those through. But leaving those aside for a second, the other problem I had, and it's, the only way I can describe this is it's the Rock problem. If you've seen the film The Rock, and suddenly they go into the amazing underground cave system of The Rock that has all these mining things because they just needed a plot point. They had all of this sudden super high-tech weaponry that they put on the roof of the White House to take down the helicopter attack. And I was like, okay, where did that come from? Why do I believe that this is not just a complete set piece that someone's pulled out of their butt? Because there was no reason why North Korea would have super high-tech American stuff. There's no reason why that would be related to this attack. There was no reason why. It just seemed to be like a convenient thing that I happen to have a ultra-secret weapon that no one else knows about that I can just wipe out a whole lot of helicopter gunships with.
Pack up into boxes, set up on the roof of the White House, and deploy.
I mean, would they carry it up the stairs? I mean, you know, how does it work? I mean, I don't know. It just seemed really odd. Whereas, like, you know, having the whatever those garbage trucks with machine guns in them, I mean, you know, you could imagine somebody somehow or other getting garbage trucks and converting them into a warehouse somewhere. But
when that happened, I was like, oh, that makes sense. Yeah, you could totally do that.
Yeah, and it'd be a sensible kind of armor plating that you would get without, you know, throwing Homeland Security a bone saying, hey, I'm about to attack somebody, just to take on something that's obviously got heavy plating. But that weapon on top, I mean, maybe if there'd been a whole plot point that was the thing that led, that they knew that there was something going on because this had been nicked, and now it appears. But just to bring it out of nowhere.
Yeah.
And then there was
a lot of that magic stuff. There was a lot of, you know, suddenly they had the perfect headset on to talk to the person at the other place, and you know, there's a Bluetooth headset that snaps into his ear, but you know, after fight after fight after fight, it never disappears.
They remarkably
he never loses cell service.
Never loses cell service, but remarkably,
oh, Satsung, by the way.
Remarkably, he never had a gun when he needed one.
Well, that was the other thing. The disappearing guns. They'd walk into a room, he'd gather guns, he'd put them in every orifice on his pants and body and everywhere, and then the next thing you know, there'd be a fight, and it would have to end in a knife fight. And I was like, there were 1,000 guns a minute ago.
Yeah, I think also I said this on the car park in Vegas.
Failed recording.
That I think someone somewhere felt that it was really necessary to have government officials say the word fuck, so that people would go, oh my, they would, I can't believe that Morgan Freeman, almost president character, would use that language. You know, like, oh, I, like, that's something that even needed to be thought about. But it seemed, I mean, clearly the language was all over the place, but it didn't really seem necessary.
Well, as I started to say earlier, the top of the building with that sudden weaponry, with my reference to The Rock, where it's just suddenly, for no apparent reason, something that you kind of just think is... When they suddenly said then that there were, in fact, tunnels under the White House as well, and they blew a hole through the wall, I was literally going to leave the theater. I was like, you've got to be kidding me. They're going to step through this hole in the wall that he's just blown and find, you know, Indiana Jones... mining carts that they're going to ride out of the White House. I mean, you know, really, for the love of, you know, you think no one would have noticed those?
Yeah, I think that would
have
been fun.
Yeah. So, but yes, but like, luckily we were saved that particular exit strategy. I think it was a shame that there were some bad shots, and I think it's a shame that there wasn't a bit more done to the plot to give us something to go along with. That being said, this isn't a huge amount of money for a big action sequence. I mean, this is not, you know, by today's standards. I mean, it's not nothing to, you know, write off.
70 mil. Yeah. 70 mil's a lot of money, but the above the line on the actors had to be massive.
Yeah.
I mean, that's true. I bet if you really had a look at that budget, there was not a huge budget for visual effects and production of what you would think from a $70 million film.
And I've got to say, I don't think most people that went to see that film were going to see that film or that, for the basis of a bunch of the actors that were in it. In other words, not that I'm against any of those actors. I just feel like if you'd spared a bit of money on some of those secondary roles, you'd had a just as good a film if you could have then pumped up maybe in the script department and given visual effects a bit more to work with. It was sort of elaborate or clever, I guess, in one sense, that they had some big sequences and then they didn't require, you'd think, a ton of other effect shots. So the fact that it was looking at 1,800 and ended up at 1,300 still seems like a really high shot count.
I thought so, too. I mean, it actually speaks well to the effects in the movie that there are that many effect shots in there because, you know, I can't point out 300 shots. I couldn't point out 100 shots that I thought were just were bad. I mean... There were a lot of good shots in there.
Yeah. I think that there must have been a lot of visual effect shots to do with the killing, like the weaponry, the guns, the splats.
Yeah,
the
bloods, yeah.
And especially
that's true.
Bullet, you know, exit velocity flashes and stuff, because there would have been a heck that's of a true. Lot of that to go through. So I could definitely get your count to 800 pretty easily just on gunfights and stuff. And then if you put monitor replacements in for some of the tech rooms, which I don't know they did, but if you did...
Yeah, they said they did. It was in the list, yeah.
You're really going to shoot that shot list pretty high without being big effect sequences like the ice sequence with the car or the initial attack sequence. Mm-hmm. It's... yeah, so I guess the question is, you know, is it a film that we think... visual effects supported the story or not? And I laugh when I say that because I mean we've basically pointed out there is a lot of story to have, but you know, was visual effects serving the story, Jason? Do you think it was, you know, furthering the cause?
I would say yes, in that obviously being able to effectively create Washington DC to destroy it while never really having to go to Washington, D.C. and doing it in Louisiana was a complete success.
Oh, there was something I was going to ask you guys about, and you might know this better than I. Somebody said this to me at NAB after they knew we were going to be talking about this. They said you can't fly over Washington to do plate photography. Is that true?
There's serious restrictions. I don't know what they are.
I would bet.
I thought I read somewhere that somebody like Art Beats or one of the big companies had arranged some special permission flyovers to get some high quality footage up to date, but I don't remember where I read that, but I know that it's really strict. But I have to imagine that somebody shot some, and I have to imagine that I actually thought the stock footage, aerial footage of Washington was atrocious. There was a shot somewhere along in there that I would not be shocked if they said it was blown up from VHS tape.
Yeah, because that's what made me think of it. There was some aerial shots of Washington that was so obviously not captured on the same camera and so obviously not done with the same tech. I completely agree.
I mean, why wouldn't you just
why wouldn't you just CG that shot since you have a lot of the stuff built already?
There were some pretty big, wide shots that would be kind of hard to do CG, I'm sure.
Yeah, that's true.
But I would have spent some money on good quality aerial shots. There either has to be, there has to be some. There has to be that. It's not.
I mean,
like,
I know when we did the helicopter shoot for the FX PhD class for New York, which you'd think would have equal restriction, no one asked us anything. No one looked in our bags. There was no TSA style inspection of what we were bringing up there. It was just a bunch of dudes who showed up with money. And and we got strapped in.
Not that FXPHD has lots of money, but yes.
You know what I mean. To cover the cost is what I meant.
No, it was just the way you said it. It was
money
like,
to rain down upon Manhattan with bags of FXPHD cash. But yeah.
This was
you would assume that there would be some restriction, and there was none. So I don't know.
I know Washington's a lot tighter than that because, I mean,
yeah, of course.
But I cannot believe that that was the best that there was available, or that you would – I would have made the decision not to use the shot if that was the best that there was available for some of the stuff.
Agreed.
This was shot 35. Did it feel filmic to you?
It was shot 35?
I believe so.
Wow.
They could have saved the money.
Yeah, I don't –
Shot at Alexa or Epic.
I would never have guessed that.
I'm going off IMDb Pro. I just checked it as we were talking, and
can see it in the shots in a lot of the breakdowns. You see the big, you know, arms with a Panavision camera on it.
Huh. I would not have guessed that.
Yeah. I don't think it was I didn't think it seemed particularly filmic, and I didn't have any problem with the framing compositional filmic aspects of it, but it didn't like. Seemed to derive a lot from being shot on film.
So what about, there was an article in Variety that don't think we can really go through this show, and maybe you were going to get there, Mike, but I mean, there was a probably one of the most damning reviews I've ever read, the headline of which was Bulgarian made CGI does more damage than the North Korean terrorists and Antoine Fuqua's grim White House actioner. And when I saw that headline, I was kind of like, well, okay. And I thought it was interesting that when I finally saw who did the effects, that it was a whole bunch of people. So I don't even know how this writer would know who did what in that regard. The review made it sound a lot. I mean, there were things I didn't like, but I don't know that I'd have gone quite that far with the review.
Yeah. I mean, I think that there were some bad visual effects in it, but I also think there were some really good visual effects in it. I think that... it would be a shame if you were someone like Ghost or some of the guys that worked on those shots that I'm talking about out the front of the White House that, you know, really seemed to be strong. Because you could be quite confident when looking at that work that, you know, you were doing nice shots. But, you know, this is what happens when you get some bad shots that leak through. I don't know also that there isn't, I'm going to be really, I don't want to be libelous, but... There is these perceptions that a country like a Bulgarian sort of based company or a Belgian based company isn't going to be able to cut it with some of the, you know, Californian based companies, which isn't necessarily strictly true. And in some cases, it's very much not true. I wonder whether some of that was tainting the kind of headline because it read in the way that would grab your attention because you're surprised that it's coming from there. And it would almost be like you would nod and, oh, yeah, well, obviously that would be the case because what would you expect from those guys? And I don't think that's fair. I think that's completely inaccurate and playing on sort of people's stereotypes of, as I say, where things are. And in a world as spread out as we are now, it's completely valid that you could have a bunch of really good artists in America, Europe doing particularly good work.
Sure. I guess it just drew my attention because I can't remember a movie lately where I've seen a review that specifically calls out the visual effects in the headline, regardless of where they're attributing it to. It just, I think that there was some stuff that was very bad and should be called out, but I was surprised to see that in Variety. Now, I do think that some of the print medias are kind of searching for their new voice as they've gone away from print, and maybe that's part of it. And I know from past experience that the people that write the articles oftentimes don't even write the headlines for these articles. That's a different department for, you know, the magazines. So
I actually think that's a horrendous cop out. I know that that's been said. I don't think anyone should be given any excuse. If you are the organization that's publishing an article, to have the writer say, well, it's not my fault that I had the outrageous headline because my, you know, the other guy did it, is just completely bullshit. Either A, fix your internal systems, B, you know, acknowledge that you're all part of the same company, or C, just give me a break. I mean, you know what, you couldn't just walk over and say, what the, I mean, yeah, I'm sorry, I just have no sympathy for someone offering that claim. You're the same company, you're the same organization, and theoretically the guy that's doing the headline should be maybe more senior than the person that's writing the article. So, yeah, I'm sorry, I've heard that before, and I find it outrageous. But I will say this, the fact of the matter is that you kind of want people to yell at bad visual effects. Now, this is like a really weird thing for me to say, but unless people point out that almost good enough is not good enough, then we're going to slip into mediocre effects work. I mean, one of the reasons we have this show is to try and call out the good stuff and call out the bad and say, yeah, it does matter if you get the shot right. It does matter if you film it right, and it does matter if it goes together right. So while I don't agree with that particular article, I want people to call out when they think that the visual effects weren't given enough emphasis in the overall making of the film, because I do want people to spend the time and the money to get the visual effects right.
Well, I couldn't agree more, and I actually think that we're going to be seeing more reviews like this as the current climate exists, and not because of where the work's being done, just because of the budgets and the squeezes and the, you know, all the problems we've been hearing about nonstop lately, you know, director involvement, you know, all that stuff. I just think that the atmosphere is ripe for way more problems coming up if you know, things don't change.
The question you've got to ask yourself is, when Worldwide Effects blew up the White House with that aerial helicopter attack, did it look better or worse than what we saw in Independence Day when they did it with a miniature? And I'd say that from a directorial point of view, it was a more impactful shot in Independence Day when they blew up the White House. But I don't know that, you know, I mean, the quality of the effects, that the dynamics, you know, the flames, the smoke, etc., mm-hmm. which I presume are all digital and not miniature, and they're really good. I mean, they looked like fireballs. They gave it scale. I don't think it looked like a dodgy CG, you know, thing. I think it looked like a really well rendered particle system, you know, volumetric solution. Now, do I hate some of those other shots? Yeah, absolutely. But I don't think that it was an appalling piece of visual effects. I think you just don't like this film. One doesn't like this film because it's just kind of lame, and as a consequence it's easier to get, you know, poking it at the I you know, it's almost like poking at the actors when they have really bad lines. I mean, you know, people say, oh, well, they're a really good actor, they just had a bad script. You know, they rarely say to the visual effects, well, you know, you did really good visual effects but just really lame kind of requirements for what you're going to do. I don't know.
Well, you know, the That's White fair. House, you mentioned the destruction on the White House. One thing that did bother me, and I don't know if it bothered either of you guys, I'm curious to see. There was a lot of, at the end, when they're walking out of the White House, and the White House is fairly well beaten up, there was something about the whole, and maybe it was practical painting in a lot of cases where they didn't enhance it, but it just felt a little overdone on the char marks and stuff like that. Not overdone as in overdone, but more like, you know, evenly spaced or something. There was something about it that just didn't feel real to me. It looked like, I don't know what it was, but did anybody else feel that way?
I didn't. Yeah, I don't have enough of an actual reference to know what a, I mean,
destroyed building.
Well, yeah, you look at news reports of a, you know, town that's been through a lot of warfare, Serbia or whatever else.
Yeah.
But,
it looked like a lot of sheetrock. Looked like the White House is made of a lot of sheetrock.
And a lot of airbrushed on.
That's what it looked like. It looked like the damage was more painted on,
yeah,
in a lot of cases than, you know.
Because I'm pretty sure the White House is a fair bit of marble and granite, honestly.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Yeah, certainly it didn't feel, yeah, it did, that you're right. Didn't it? Didn't feel as solid a interior material as you'd expect from a stone and marble type White House.
Yeah,
actually doing some research as I've been talking because I was just looking up something. I unfortunately have to say that in fact, Worldwide FX does take credit for the falling flag shot of the. And it gets worse. It seems to me from what they've got on their website that the falling flag was actually CG, and that the
really
yeah because they've got a shot of the render of the non-tinted pink White House. So maybe they got another bash at it in color grading that took it off. But it's unfortunately that horrendous rose-colored White House white flag dropping sequences on Worldwide FX's website. So sorry, guys. Big thumbs down from us on that one.
Wow.
Okay. Well, I guess that kind of wraps it up for this week. Sorry to be so negative, guys, in talking about this. But as we say, we're trying to be creatively negative, or sorry, we're going to put this constructively negative in commenting on things, so as to say that, hey, it does matter when you get it right, and it certainly sticks in our claw when it's wrong. Any other things you'd like to add? Any particular shots that you didn't touch on in the show, guys?
I thought it was interesting that they chose to borrow a term from, or a similar term from X-Men for their incredibly hard to crack, yet somehow did it pretty fast, missile defense system, Cerebrus. But that's just a plot point.
There are so many plot points over that code sequence. I couldn't begin. Quite frankly, the absurdity of a unique system where the president would tell two people to, give away the codes because I won't give away the last one. It was just ridiculous. But look, it goes all the way back to war games, right? In military systems being overtaken by somebody and they can't shut it down.
Yes, but that movie was good.
Certainly didn't become self-aware in 2013.
No. No whopper.
No. Hey, there was a technical flaw in War Games, though. Remember at the very end in War Games when it runs all the scenarios and discovers that it's a no-win scenario?
Mm-hmm.
It literally runs it, and then it kind of crashes because it works out there's no way it can win. And huge kind of puffs of smoke and stuff come out of the consoles. I'm sorry, but there is actually no software crash that's going to cause major hardware to suddenly spontaneously combust.
True.
Movie magic. Movie
but,
magic.
But you need to, in the 80s, people were not as computer savvy as they are now. So you need a little bit of the old analog tube, my TV went out kind of thing.
Because it's thinking so hard. It blew out all its tubes. Yeah. Is that what you're saying? Oh, okay.
Yeah, basically. Robbie the Robot, people still thought of that, in the 80s.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't hold War Games in quite the same regard as you, obviously. And don't even get me started on some of those other films in the same era. Hey, thanks so much for being with us, guys. I really appreciate it. And Jeff, if people want to follow you on Twitter and stuff, what's your Twitter handle?
Neon Marg, NEONMARG, based on my website, Neon Margarita. That's my email and web handle. So I've shortened it so it's at Neon Marg on Twitter.
Though, of course, Jeff can be found on FX Guide. He is one of the founders.
Absolutely.
And Jason?
Jason Diamond on Twitter, although based on this conversation, I might change it to Professor Falcon.
I'm obviously Mike Seymour over on Twitter, but I just want to flag some of the great VFX shows we've got coming up. And there are some really good films coming out. We've got Man of Steel, Iron Man 3, and Oblivion. And I've already tweeted that because Oblivion's opened here, that I think it was a cracker of a film. And I really enjoyed it. So I'm not gonna say anything other than we will promise to not bring you those shows and have any spoilers without warning you of the spoilers. But it's always good if you can to watch the show before we talk about them on the VFX show, because in some of the cases of some of those movies, and there are more coming. we definitely would be spoiling some really serious plot points. Thanks so much for being with us, guys, on the show. We really do appreciate it. I would leave you with a quote from the film. I just honestly can't remember a single one. Until next time, I'm Mike Seymour. See you guys.
If you have any questions or comments, please email us at vfx@fxguide.com. Copyright 2012, FX Guide, LLC.